Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau, and I'm your host. I'm the author of several books on living healthfully and compassionately, and you can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, joyfulvegan.com. Today's topic is the symbols of Easter and Passover, honoring tradition as well as our values. I've talked about honoring tradition and honoring our values at the same time when I've talked about other holidays, and certainly it applies to Easter and Passover, these spring holidays that are upon us. And one of the biggest misconceptions about veganism that I encounter is the assumption that as we honor our values, we have to forego tradition, as if these two things are mutually exclusive. Food-related rituals, particularly those involving animals, are likely to be so revered that they supersede consideration for anything or anyone else. Now, I have an entire chapter in the 30-Day Vegan Challenge in which I discuss this and include recipes and menu ideas for a holiday more in keeping with the holidays we celebrate, including Easter and Passover. Now, Easter, as you know, is a Christian holiday that marks the end of Lent. Lent is a 40-day period of fasting, penance, and prayer. And then Easter, of course, at the end of that 40-day period, celebrates the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Now, I grew up Catholic, and I'll be honest, I loved this time of year. There was a profound mix of sorrow and joy, because of course he's crucified on Good Friday, and then he resurrects on Sunday, on Easter. So this sorrow and joy, this darkness and light, this solemnity and jubilation, it was just so profound to me. And I was aware of all of this. Even very young, I was aware of that mix and that juxtaposition. I was aware of it because I grew up Catholic, but I also attended Catholic school and catechism and did communion and did confirmation. I mean, I did all of it. It was a huge part of my upbringing, and it was a huge part of my experience. We would watch movies about Jesus's life in school. I mean, this is what I was, you know, was all around me. It was a huge part of everything I saw and heard. The Stations of the Cross is something you do in Catholicism where every church has their own stations, and they're depicted either through some kind of art, could be stained glass, could be stone, could be drawings, paintings, what have you. And the stations basically depict the story of Jesus's life. So you go to each station, and that's one part of his life. And I was so moved by this because I'm really moved by narrative. As you know, I'm really moved by stories. And so it was something that I really appreciated growing up that way, and of course, didn't really appreciate it until I was older looking back. But it's something I really appreciate because I loved kind of following this narrative. And so Lent was one of these things that was also a big part of my experience that you had fun with it. I mean, that's just kind of what it was. For those who don't know the Catholic rituals, one of the things you do during Lent is you give something up. Lent is all about sacrificing something, modeling Jesus who fasted for 40 days in the desert, having been tempted by and resisted Satan. That's kind of the idea behind Lent. And I loved it. I loved it because there was intention during this time of year. The intention was to stop, reflect, and temporarily relinquish something you loved to eat or drink or say or do. Now, when I was little, of course, I gave up candy or chocolate or sweets. You know, it was always something innocent like that. As I grew older, I would use it as a time to practice self-discipline. So I would, you know, not swear or gossip, watch my favorite television show. I mean, you would kind of identify the things that you loved, and you would commit to giving them up. I'll confess something else you probably don't know. I smoked, and I definitely remember there were times during Lent when I would give up smoking. Now, I'm talking about this as having been an adult. Of course, I haven't practiced Catholicism for many, many years, a couple decades now, but I was in my early 20s when I was letting go of it, and I was smoking in my early 20s. So it was definitely something, even though I wasn't going to church every day and practicing Catholicism, people have asked me about my religious upbringing, so there you go. I was still, you know, you could still kind of do things that were part of your history. And because I always appreciated the idea behind Lent of that self-discipline, certainly into my young adulthood, I would still kind of use it as an opportunity to relinquish something I like. And I learned that with a little conviction, we are capable of doing whatever it is we set our minds to. That's something I learned a long time ago. And I know that a lot of people pick up the 30-Day Vegan Challenge. I know this from the previous edition. I know it from the online program, and do it during Lent. And I applaud them. And I know that the people who started it for Lent and then they never went back again. So I love that the 30-Day Vegan Challenge can be used as an opportunity for someone to, you know, give up meat, dairy, and eggs, and then completely have a paradigm shift. So that's pretty awesome to me. Now, for our purposes, interestingly, during the Middle Ages, the consumption of meat, dairy, and eggs was forbidden during Lent. It's not uncommon that religions would forbid certain foods during certain religious holidays. And it was so during the Middle Ages, the consumption of meat, dairy, and eggs was forbidden during Lent. Then over time, dispensations, as they're called, or exceptions, were allowed for dairy. And so that too became acceptable to eat during this fasting time. Eventually, eggs were allowed. And so they too became part of the fast. Okay, you can see that the options are expanding, kind of losing the whole point of the fast and the relinquishment of things you love. So although the original doctrine was to not eat animal products at all during the 40 days between Ash Wednesday, which is the beginning of Lent, and Good Friday, which is the Friday before Easter, marking Jesus's, you know, it was when he was crucified. That was Good Friday. So that's when those 40 days were supposed to take place. By the time I was growing up, obviously not in the Middle Ages, I'm not that old, we had to abstain only on Fridays. We had to abstain from eating animal flesh only on Fridays, and fish was acceptable. So land animal flesh, only abstain on Fridays, but you can have the flesh of aquatic animals. So the original idea was for Catholics to abstain from consuming flesh every Friday throughout the year. That was originally what the Pope decreed, that Catholics would abstain from consuming animal flesh every Friday throughout the year. And then during Lent, meat, dairy, and eggs during that 40-day period. Then it became that you don't have to abstain from meat, dairy, and eggs during Lent, and you just abstain from consuming animal flesh on Fridays during Lent. That was it. And fish is okay, and dairy is okay, and eggs are okay. Now, if a special occasion or holiday, such as a wedding, falls on a Friday, that Friday during Lent when you're supposed to abstain from consuming animal flesh, you're exempt. You can eat meat. In fact, here is what AmericanCatholic.org has to say about the rules for abstinence during Lent. And I quote, "Abstinence does not include meat juices and liquid foods made from meat. Thus, such foods as chicken broth, consommé, soups cooked or flavored with meat, meat gravies or sauces, as well as seasonings or condiments made from animal fat are not forbidden. So it is permissible to use margarine and lard," and margarine they're referring to as an animal product here, "even baking drippings, which contain little bits of meat, may be poured over lettuce as seasoning," end quote. And we wonder why people think abstaining from animal products means having bits of animal products when it's convenient. Although some Orthodox Christians still follow the earlier teachings to abstain from animal products altogether, clearly the bar is kept pretty low in terms of what is required of people. And that's what I have a problem with. I'm not reading all of this to mock the Catholic Church. I'm reading this as an example of clearly they've received pushback over the years, as we just want our meat and dairy and eggs, and we want it all. And so the Catholic Church is, you know, kind of kowtowing to that and trying to be flexible to say, it's okay, you can have this. You know, it's okay if you have bacon in the salad, just don't have a big piece of bacon. I mean, just, but little bits of bacon's okay. So the problem I have with that is that it just keeps the bar so low. And my discussion here is to illustrate what I have said in the past about how we pick and choose the traditions we want to uphold. We justify the consumption of turkeys on Thanksgiving or eggs at Easter and meat during Lent on the grounds of tradition, even though it doesn't really hold up. To authentically honor the traditions of this Christian holiday would mean to abstain from meat, dairy, and eggs entirely during Lent. But rules have been relaxed to suit people's modern tastes and desires. That makes sense. So when we talk about tradition, one of the questions we have to ask is, at what point in history, like, what are we trying to adhere to? When? At what rule? Which tradition? When? During what century? During what decade? Because we change things all the time, and this is an illustration of that. Now, the Easter eggs we boiled and colored as children represented something so much deeper, right? I mean, the idea around eggs being part of Easter, it's really because it's really more about spring that kind of came from a lot of pagan holidays and pagan rituals with celebrating spring and rebirth. And eggs really are the perfect embodiment of the hope that after death comes life, that after winter comes spring, that after despair comes hope itself. And that's the point. The egg is the symbol of these ideas, but we have come to put more weight on the symbol rather than on its meaning. And for the hens whose reproductive cycles are exploited for this symbol, there is no life. There is no hope. Individual Americans consume about 250 chickens' eggs each year. And to keep this consumption steady, the egg industry currently confines over 290 million hens, with ad campaigns romantically touting the nutritional benefits of what the egg industry calls nature's perfect food, egg consumption is on the rise. And as you know, labels such as organic and cage-free and free-range are effective marketing terms, but they mean very little to the birds themselves. Like all females, including humans, the reproductive cycles of hens slow down over time, and eventually hens stop producing eggs, just like humans. No longer valuable to the egg industry, all unproductive hens are then sold to the meat industry, and they're killed to be used for lower grade products such as canned soup or frozen pot pie. And most birds in operations labeled humane, quote unquote, are still confined and crowded indoors. Many are debeaked, and most come from the same hatcheries that kill over 250 million newly hatched male chicks each year in ways that make horror movies seem like romantic comedies. Males are killed upon birth, of course, because they don't have eggs. It doesn't make economic sense to feed animals who will not produce anything in return. Of course, nobody wants roosters. They're not kept and raised for meat. A lot of people think, well, why don't they just use them for meat? Because through selective breeding, egg-laying breeds are created for the purpose of high egg production, not fast flesh growth that is valued in the meat industry. Male chicks are ground up and used as fertilizer, as food for other livestock, or as filler for dog and cat food. This is all very different from what we envisioned the spring holiday to be about. But how can we experience the meaning of this holiday without compromising our values? Most of us grew up, you know, coloring eggs, hiding eggs, and we do that with our children today. How can we still honor this holiday, the religious holiday of Lent and Easter, the celebration of spring? How do we do that without compromising our values? I will answer that question in just a moment. I want to first thank the people making this podcast possible. Number one, you, the listeners of this podcast, and anyone who supports this podcast. If you would like to sponsor this podcast, please go to joyfulvegan.com and become a monthly contributor, which gives you lots of fun perks, or you can make a one-time donation. Thank you so much for enabling me to be a voice for the animals via this podcast. So that's the question. How can we reflect our values, be voices for animals, not contribute to harming them, and reflect tradition that might be important to us, religious traditions that might be important to us? Well, first of all, the egg itself, as I said, really is a beautiful symbol of life, signifying the life that comes from female eggs, including human eggs, right? We just don't have to commodify them or eat them to honor this symbol. So we can still use the egg as a symbol for life and birth and hope, which means we can paint wooden or ceramic or paper mache eggs that can be cherished each year as decoration. I love that, because then you're using it over and over again each year, especially if kids are involved in making these as something you can hang on the tree or just hang in the house or put on the refrigerator or what have you. But we can still use that symbol, and because it is a beautiful symbol, without hurting anybody. We can fill plastic eggs with treats for children and hide them for Easter egg hunts. I used to love Easter egg hunts. You don't have to stop doing Easter egg hunts. You don't have to stop, like, putting pennies or treats in little plastic eggs and hide them during Easter egg hunts. And then you can reuse the plastic eggs every year as well. No waste, no suffering, right? And when I reflect on the Easter egg hunts that I did love as a child, just loved them. It wasn't the eggs themselves, right? In this case, I wasn't a child going, oh, what a lovely symbol of rebirth. I mean, I wasn't aware of that when I was a child. What I loved more, well, and of course, there was the chocolate rabbits. There was like the chocolate. We got a lot of chocolate. Our Easter baskets were ridiculous. Our parents would go overboard and hide our baskets and, of course, would be filled with just lots of candy and eggs, but also those big chocolate bunnies, those big chocolate rabbits. So of course I loved those as well. But what I loved was that these Easter egg hunts were community events with friends and family members, and all the children were there, and all the children were tasked with a quest to find what was hidden just for us. That excitement isn't lessened because animal products aren't used. Another symbol for spring would be a flower bulb or vegetable seeds or seeds for a tree. And in fact, they're more than just a symbol, right? Because they really do hold and deliver the promise of a flower or vegetables or leaves or fruit, right? They really are more than a symbol because they really do blossom into something living again and again every year. What better way for our children to understand the processes of nature that with tenderness, attention, and water, there is a beautiful and even edible outcome? Celebrate the foods of the season and create your menu around arugula, asparagus, basil, broccoli, cabbage, carrots, cauliflower, corn. Yes, I'm doing this in alphabetical order. Fava beans, grapefruit, green onions, leeks, lemons, lettuce, limes, mint, nettles, new potatoes, parsnips, pea greens, peppers, radicchio, spinach, spring greens, and watercress. These are all just beautiful spring vegetables and herbs and fruits that come into season this time of year. Those are the foods to center our menu around. And of course, many vegan chocolatiers do sell chocolate bunnies and chocolate eggs and other candy we associate with Easter and Easter baskets this time of year, including Allison's Gourmet. And I do recommend going to allisonsgourmet.com. They have the most delicious chocolates, and they being Allison. She just does amazing work, and she's got brownies and fudge and cookies and confections throughout the year, and I just adore her food. It's really fantastic. So she does have the chocolate rabbits you can get, and you have time to get them, and I think you'll love them. Now, of course, Easter and Lent are not the only religious observances that fall in the beginning of spring. Passover is a Jewish festival that commemorates the exodus of Jews out of Egypt and thus from slavery to freedom. The central ritual of Passover is a special dinner called the Seder, the etymology of which is derived from the Hebrew word for order, referring to the specific order of the ritual meal itself. Each food and beverage chosen for the meal represents an element of the narrative told in Exodus in the Bible and represents the very significant journey to freedom. Again, these are symbolic foods representing something deeper. For instance, leavened foods are not eaten because when fleeing Egypt, the Jews wouldn't have had time to allow their dough to rise. So the only acceptable bread during this time is made from matzah and is used to make everything from cakes and cookies, like using matzah flour, breadcrumbs using matzo meal, and the bread itself, which is in the form of full-sized matzahs. And I know people are going to say something about my pronunciation as matzah, or I could say matzah, it's fine. The six symbolic foods on the Seder plate play an important role since they're used to recount the story of the Exodus. But like Easter eggs representing renewal and rebirth, these Seder foods stand for something else. They convey the elements of the powerful message of Passover, that freedom is possible, that slavery can end, and that the future can be better than the past or the present. Although many plant foods are traditionally part of the dinner, a few animal products are also used as symbols, though plant foods can be used in those cases as well. One of the elements of that Seder dinner is fruit, both dried and fresh, along with nuts and sweet spices. They're soaked in wine, resulting in a flavorful, delicious dish. And I have a recipe for it in, oh gosh, is it in the vegan table or is it in Color Me Vegan? It's haroset, sometimes spelled C-H-A-R-O-S-E-T, sometimes spelled H-A-R-O-S-E-T, haroset. And that represents the mortar that Jews worked with when they were enslaved by the Egyptians. Another element of the Seder dinner is bitter herbs, representing the harshness of slavery. Ashkenazi Jews tend to use horseradish or the bitter-tasting heart of romaine lettuce, and Sephardic Jews often use celery leaves, green onion, or parsley. Another element is a vegetable other than bitter herbs, which is dipped in salt water to signify the slave's tears. Another element is a boiled egg, which is the symbol of fertility and new life, and that's replaced at vegan seders with roasted nuts, a flower, or a small white egg-sized eggplant. I don't know if you've ever seen the smaller eggplants, not the big, large, purple globe eggplants, but the beautiful little white ones, and they're shaped like eggs. And you can use that at your Seder dinner. Same symbolic meaning, and no suffering for anyone. The only meat on the Seder plate is the shank bone of a lamb or goat, or the neck or wing of a chicken. And that's meant to represent the lamb that was offered for sacrifice. Jewish vegans use roasted beets, and they are expressly allowed by the Talmud, or a sweet potato. So it's as traditional to have a vegan Seder as, actually, I'm just remembering some friends who have a vegan Seder every year, and they call it a Vader. I think it's called a Vader, but we don't have to change the names. I mean, it's cute that we do that. It really is, because it, you know, gives weight to the fact that it's a vegan Seder, but it's just as traditional to have a Seder that's vegan as it is to have a Seder that's not. And that's what I'm really trying to get across here. I mean, what better way to celebrate the freedom from slavery than to use symbols that don't merely convey compassion, freedom, and liberation, but that actually are products of compassion, freedom, and liberation, i.e. plants. Certainly the animals themselves, the victims of our appetites, would have us include them in our circle of compassion. Like us, they want to live. If they have wings, they want to fly. If they have legs, they want to walk. If they have voices, they want to communicate. If they have offspring, they want to nurture them. To center our holiday meals on foods that give life rather than take life is in keeping with the values we hold and the ideals we're celebrating. With a little creativity and a lot of sensitivity, we will find that we can indeed adhere to traditions while honoring our values. We need not sacrifice one for the other. And in fact, nothing need be sacrificed to enjoy these holidays. Not the fun of the quest, not the expression of creativity, not the celebration of freedom, not the building of community, and not the animals themselves. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please review and rate the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and other podcatchers. Share it with your peeps and support its existence by going to joyfulvegan.com and becoming a patron. For the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thanks for listening.